This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Well, good morning to everybody. And can I start off by saying thank you to Chloe for inviting me along to speak today. And can I also say thank you, because we don't always get the opportunity to do so, to say thank you for the leadership that you provide in the culture and leisure sectors. And also a very big thank you for all the work and the dedication that you have and the commitment to sport. I think this is a fitting venue to discuss the power of sport. Arsenal, along with the other 19 Premier League clubs, has signed up to the Premier League for Sport scheme, which was launched nationally in June this year. And it's enthusing young people in the Olympic sports of judo, badminton, volleyball and table tennis. Premier League for Sports is a partnership between the Premier League, national governing bodies, local schools and clubs, to deliver club opportunities for young people in non-traditional sports. And again, I'm pleased to see a wide variety of important partners here today. Because I think with the Premier League of Sports, it is about effective partnership working and the combined efforts of everyone. It will be critical that we have this if we're to deliver our shared ambition to get more young people participating regularly in sport in our schools and in our communities. So it's about government departments, Sport England and the Youth Sport Trust, county sports partnerships, local authorities, school sports partnerships, primary care trusts, national governing bodies of sport and a wide range of other sports providers. All, I believe, have a key role to play. And we've heard from the panel that sport is unparalleled in its ability to have a positive impact on young people's lives and in our communities. Now, your efforts to get more people on the pitch, in the pool, on the court or in the local park can contribute, as we've heard, to a number of national indicators, at least one which will be prioritised in every area's local strategic plan. National Indicator 56, concerned with obesity amongst primary age children. National Indicator 110, increasing engagement in positive activities. N18, sport and active recreation for those aged 16 and over. And our very own National Indicator 57, the five-hour offer, increasing children and young people's participation in PE and sport. I think the reason that we're all here today is that we understand and feel passionate for sport, from whichever angle that you look at it from. Sport and physical activity engages, unites and motivates people. And as we all know, that sport has a unique power to break down the barriers, promote social inclusion and enhance community cohesion. Now, providing positive activities, especially on a Friday and a Saturday night, can prevent young people becoming involved in crime and antisocial behaviour. 66% of young people told the Time to Talk consultation that more activities would do more to keep them out of trouble, and sport tends to be on top of their wish list. Now, as a former prisons minister, I know that one of the busiest places in a prison is the gym. And I think that proves to me that sport is often the only tool that can engage the disengaged or bring about positive behavioural change. And as we constantly see this with our Respect Athlete Mentoring Programme, which regularly turns around young people's lives. And of course, sport improves health and well-being. A recent British Heart Foundation report, Couch Kids, underlined the need to instil a love of activity in people when they're young. And the report praised our PE and sports strategy for its contribution to young people's health. And as Ofsted told us, PE in schools is contributing effectively to the Every Child Matter outcomes, particularly in relation to being healthy, enjoying and achieving and making a positive contribution. So sport, again, raises educational standards, and sports colleges are the fastest improving forms in terms of results at GCSE. And I think we have not to forget about the pure and simple enjoyment that there is from being involved in sport, whatever your age, whatever your background, whatever your ability. And I say that as the goalkeeper of the parliamentary football team. Not very good, but I'm still playing football at my elderly age. Now, Sir Steve Redgrave and our six youth legacy ambassadors completely understand this. I was out with Steve earlier this week. And you see those ambassadors who have a life commitment to sport, how they can inspire young people to take up sport for life. So in short, I think what I'm saying is that in this country, sport helps to define and transform lives. And I think it's this passion for sport and the unparalleled reach of sport is the reason why we won the right to host the 2012 Olympic and Paralympic Games. Now, as Minister for Sport, I'm serious and determined to maximise the opportunity which the Olympics and the Paralympics provide us, to deliver a world-leading sporting nation and get more young people, children and adults specifically, participating regularly in sport. So we've raised the level of ambition for sport in this country for every young person in every community. Yes, London 2012 will deliver world-class facilities and a world-class spectacle, but we're determined to make sure that we also deliver a legacy of increased physical activity and sporting participation in every English region, in Scotland, in Wales and in Northern Ireland, making the UK a world-leading sporting nation. So what will this look like? It means creating a world-class community sports system and getting 1 million people participating in more sport by 2013. And it also means creating a world-class system for PE in sport to ensure that every child aged 5 to 16 is offered 5 hours of PE and sport per week, with 3 hours for 16 to 19-year-olds. Now, as part of this, every young person should have access to regular competitive sport, coaching to improve their skills and enjoyment, a choice of different sports. There should be pathways to clubs and elite sport and opportunities to lead and volunteer in sport as well. So for all these reasons, government is investing in sport like never before and has put its weight around this agenda. Over £780 million has been spent between 2008 and 2011 through the PE and sport strategy to assist the delivery of the five-hour offer. Between 2009 and 2013, £480 million has been invested through the whole sport plans to increase and sustain grassroots participation. We've also reformed the way that we invest. We've moved away from investing in programmes and now invest in sport in itself. And in partnership with the Department of Health, we've given a clear focus to the non-sport physical activity. Now, as a former leader of Bradford Council, I understand that the local partners find themselves in challenging positions in relation to government expectations and the different agendas that can be brought. But I don't want to apologise for our high expectations for the five-hour offer. I think that we will be working with other departments to show that our policies and agendas are joined up and that PE, sport and Olympics and raising school standards gets high up on that agenda. And we've talked about Building Schools for the Future programme. I think it's 12.5% of the Building Schools for the Future programme is being spent on sports and facilities. And we've asked the Building Schools for the Future to look at that now in terms of what does that mean in the delivery. Now, we were very pleased last year to have 9 out of 10 pupils that were able to have the 2 hours offer of PE and school sport each week. And I think we've now put the firm foundations in place to deliver a five-hour offer. We know that over half the 5 to 16-year-olds are already doing 3 hours of PE and school sport each week. And we also know that 92% of areas in England have a five-hour offer plan in place, thanks to the great work done by the School Sports Partnership and the County Sports Partnerships working with local authorities. So early in the new year, we expect this to rise to 100%, so that there is going to be a universal five-hour offer right across the country. And we've also published our guide to delivering the five-hour offer. This gives clarity on how we expect the five-hour offer to be managed locally, with school sports partnerships, county sports partnerships working together, and with the critical involvement of local authorities and local strategic partners, to ensure that our ambitions are listed in local area agreements and embedded in local community strategies. I think Lee Mason from the CSP network is speaking later here today about the key role that county sport partnerships will play in help facilitating and coordinating joined up plans at local levels. I think our five-hour offer guide also addresses the issue of how you measure the five-hour offer locally, which I know has been a barrier for some, but not all, in integrating into local plans. Well, unfortunately, it hasn't been possible to deliver a single local measure for the five-hour offer. Local partners are encouraged to put in place local surveys, as we've done with taking part at the national level. And we think this will provide a fuller local picture of sports participation amongst young people. And I'm confident that the local surveys can complement data from the school sports survey to provide information about the fourth hour and the fifth hour of the five-hour offer. And again, Mike Diaper from Sport England and Oliver from Youth Sport Trust will be considering this and other important issues with you in more detail today. I know that there are excellent models of local delivery in place all across the country. I know a few, for example, in Cumbria, Lancashire and central London, but there will be many more, each appropriate to local circumstances. So I think these examples show us how, with clear roles and responsibilities, trust and mutual respect, our national agenda for the five-hour offer is being embedded in local priorities alongside our national policy agendas. And I saw this recently at Penryn Sports College in Cornwall, where Building Schools for the Future, which is the largest capital investment programme for 50 years, alongside a high-quality offer for PE in sport, is positioning that school at the heart of the community, energising the local area and transforming lives. So as I keep saying, and it is simple, we need all local partners to play their role. I want each of us to make it our mission to continue to demonstrate the impact of sport, and this is linked to a range of priority indicators. Indeed, local strategic partnerships have a duty to ensure that young people have access to a wide range of high-quality, positive activities, which include sport. And of course, there are obstacles that we have to face. The economic climate and the squeeze on resources is making it necessary for us all to do more with less. So finding, as I said, robust measurement tools is not always easy. And securing senior-level buy-in is also sometimes a challenge. And sometimes problems can seem insurmountable. Well, that's my job to help when that's the case. I will do my best to help you deliver the partnerships that we're seeking to deliver. Every partnership has had a hallmark of the success of Sports Unlimited, which in my view has acted as a valuable catalyst at local level. So County Sports Partnerships are a key partner in brokering the role between national governing bodies and local authorities. So there are great opportunities there, I believe, to make sure that we can deliver what we know works. As Sports Minister, which I have to say is the best job in government, it's the power of sport to transform people's lives that has made me believe that resources are important, there's no doubt about that. But I think it's the leadership and the aspiration that we can give to youngsters. And you look at the sports leaders from the secondary schools that go into the primary schools and what they do in terms of enhancing and enriching young people's lives. And now with the sports governing bodies having the resources, there is an issue about capability for those governing bodies, and we're working with Sport England and UK Sport to make sure that, not in a threatening way, that they have the capacity and the ability to be able to deliver what they say they can do through the whole sport plans. But I'm particularly proud of the role of local government. Local government has been the providers of sport in our communities for many, many years, but I think that's gone not unnoticed, but unrewarded, if you like, in terms of the positive effect that you can have in the partnerships that we need to have. The Olympics and the Paralympics in 2012 will be the hub and the cog of what we want to try and achieve, but we talk now about this decade of sport. We started this year with the Cricket 2020 World Cup. Next year we have the Rugby Union World Cup for women. We've got the Ryder Cup in Wales. In 2011 we've got the World Badminton Championships. In 2012 the Olympic Games and Paralympic Games in London. 2013 the Rugby World Cup, Rugby League World Cup. In 2014 the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow. 2015 the Rugby Union World Cup. 2016, but hopefully moving on to 2018 and the Soccer World Cup. And the reason for doing that is just to have these world-class events here in the UK, but it's to keep the profile of sport high so that we can deliver on all these other agendas. When you looked at the free swimming programme that we have for the over-60s and under-16s, I was delighted by the take-up of that. And there were some difficulties, and it's about negotiation, how we iron out those difficulties. But what we did in government was bring five government departments together to deliver on free swimming. And I have to say to you now that sport is high up on central government's agenda, and that the success that we're having, the success from Beijing in terms of the Olympians and the Paralympians that came back with the medals, and those athletes going into their communities inspiring people, has helped us keep that momentum going. So I believe that the five-hour offer is achievable. It is something that I think that we can deliver. We'll need to be making sure that we work with the clubs, with coaches. We need more coaches. I want to see coaching be seen as a serious profession. I think that we don't treat coaches in the UK in the same way as they do in America, for instance, where if you're a high school coach, you're a key member of society with a good standard of living, but you're integral to sports delivery in that system. And I want us to raise the profile of coaches here in the UK. So it's a good time to be involved in sport. I think it's never been a better time. There are always challenges. The investment's in there, but as ever, it's not enough. We need to keep trying to do more. But I know that the leadership that you've offered in each of your communities will help us keep that momentum going, keep sport high on the agenda, and I wish you every success. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Sherry. And now's the time. This is the man that you can really ask the questions, the man that can change things. So, again, we'll have roving mics going round. If you can raise your hand, and I'll try and pick you out. And we've got one here. If we take two or three if we've got some ready. Any hands going up at the moment? Yep. So we'll take those two together there, I think. First of all, Jerry, and then take and deal with them both together. Is that okay? Where you go, sir.
Thanks. Hello. I'm Dion Watts from Neil Stewart Associates. And we've been talking a lot this morning about LAA outcomes through sports provision, but I was struck by something Caroline Spellman said the other day when she said that LAAs might be replaced by total place. And I was just wondering what you thought the effect of the total place initiative is going to be on sports provision.
I mean,
I was going to say, take the other one, take the two together, give you a chance to jot things down. That's okay. Yeah, okay, sir, do you want to ask your question as well?
Yeah, morning, Mr. Sutcliffe, Burke Gravis, Haringey Sports Development. You were with us the other day. Can I ask you just one question? Back in 91, I used to work for a council. We got wiped out. When do you envisage sport becoming a statutory service rather than endangered species? Because that, when you're talking about local government, probably did me a great favour because it made me set up Haringey Sports Development. But it's been a long, hard road. When do you envisage that changing? Because we are an endangered species.
Yeah, I mean, I think... For me, what I try to argue, and would argue in government, regardless of whoever's in government, that sport actually should be a cabinet position. It should have an opportunity to be involved in all of the other areas of departmental spending, which by stealth we've done really in terms, as I say, the example of free swimming is a good example by bringing five government departments together. And what we've been able to prove is that sport can impact on each of those programme areas. When I was prisons minister, I said the busiest place in the prison was the gym. So we were using sport as a diversion for youngsters that had got into a life of crime as a positive outcome. I think on the issue around total place, I think the jury's out in the sense of will that be the right way forward. What I'm concerned about is that we've changed quite dramatically the sports infrastructure structure, if you like, in terms of now Youth Sport Trust dealing with school and community sport, Sport England dealing with whole sport plans through national and governing bodies, and UK Sport dealing with the elite end. Then on alongside that, you've got Sports Coach UK, the English Institute of Sport, and then local authorities. And I want to make sure that we don't have something new that disrupts the ambition and the delivery of where we want to head. And I think that leads on then to the statutory side of things. It's taken a while for us to get sport as national performance indicators. We're doing that now. Many local authorities taking that on board. I'm not saying that we'll ever get to it being a statutory service, but certainly from the public side of things as well now, and the community recognising the value of sport, I think it's a higher profile and a target for any efficiency savings or cuts. But I would see that as a long-term objective that we should try and achieve. And I think that can be done by all of us, reiterating what the power of sport can be to change lives.
Okay, more questions? Yeah, I've got one, Jerry, for you. She's about you talked about linking in with other ministers and other departments. I mean, have you had problems convincing other ministers about the value of sport, the importance of sport? Perhaps not Andy Burns, but maybe others.
Well, I was going to use that when Andy moved from DCMS to the Department of Health, and we saw quite a tremendous shift now. And anybody that works with the local PCTs and with the health service has seen the change now from treatment and cure to prevention being equally as important, and the programmes coming through. And Mike Farrer, who was the acting chair of Sport England, is now Andy's czar for physical activity, and I think the linkages there are very good and will be very positive. I have to say, it started off being very difficult. I mean, I think if you look where sport has been over the years in the various different departments that it's been in, it's been difficult. But we've now established ourselves in DCMS. As I say, I actually would have a department for sport, because I think you can actually sustain it on its own. But certainly, colleagues now in transport, in health, in education, in the Treasury are aware of the values that we've got to be able to implement their different programmes. And, you know, the resistance now is less than it has been.
Questions, lady here? Got anybody else following this lady here, please? Well, now's your chance to ask questions of the Minister.
Thank you. My name's Lisa. I'm from the Women's Sport and Fitness Foundation. I was really pleased to hear you say that physical activity has been given a home in the Department of Health. But I was wondering if you could expand a little on that, whether there's going to be budget from DCMS as well for physical activity, and if you could tell us a little about the Physical Activity Alliance, and also, crucially for this conference, what the plans are for delivering physical activity to young people who may not be so inspired by traditional sport.
Yes, that's a good point. And where we are with the Department of Health is that of the 2 million target that we set ourselves for 2013, 1 million will come through sport and 1 million will come through the Department of Health physical activity. There is a budget change, the Change for Life programme that's funded by Department of Health, and there's money attached to that. You'll be aware last week of the Sport England announcement of the £10 million that was available for women to try and get women back into sport. Within that, opportunities for young women to be involved in that. There's to be a further round in terms of extra money for disability sport, which we'll announce in the new year. So it's that wider offer, I think, that's actually helped us to get more people involved. The old sort of stereotypes that in school sport, that if you were a boy, you play football, cricket and rugby, and if you're a girl, you play hockey and netball. That's gone, thankfully. Excuse me. We're in a position now where there is such a wide range of offers that are available, and that is attracting people in. But with that, then, you need to make sure that you've got the right coaching provision and the right support. And I want to see centres of excellence, maybe based in universities, in every region of the country. And we need to link it in with training of coaches and development of coaches. When I said to you earlier about that, I want to see coaches becoming more profession, or a profession that's developed more in the UK. And if you set these centres of excellence up, that's then available for local authorities and schools to buy in the wide range of support for different sports. So, you know, the money is there. I think in these times, you know, when we are looking to use money, whether it's central government or local government, more smarter, it's the advocacy of sport and the ability of sport to get into those other areas that I think we ought to be able to use through the partnerships that we've got.
Yes, Gerry, it comes in two parts. First of all, given the challenging times that we're all living in, how much is the government doing about connecting with people so that they understand that not everything in encouraging sport in education costs money? That initiatives between local clubs and schools and local individuals and young people actually can be delivered without any cost. I mean, obviously, I'm not in any way suggesting that you cut any sports or education budgets, but it's something that I know can be done and is not, I don't think, articulated enough. The second thing is, and you may want to duck this one, is that I wondered if you had any comment on the Guardian story on the front page this morning about the government cutting down on quangos and moving some of the national organisations supporting everything, not just sport, out into the regions. I mean, I think, you know, not wanting to make a party political issue of this, that at least one of the two parties is saying what they want to do and why, and not just saying they're going to do it. But I wonder whether you had any comment on that.
Well, thanks, Graham. First of all, your point is quite right, that for a lot of disadvantaged groups, for a lot of people that are hard to reach, you know, sport is not the obvious easy answer, and structured sport is not the obvious easy answer. That's why programmes like Kicks through the Premier League, the street games, all of those are important to us as well, that get the opportunity for people to be brought in and really asking youngsters what it is that they want. And this is, you know, one of the things I've been talking to Sir Steve Redgrave about how he can influence lots of that. But the programmes are out there, the good practices out there, and I agree with you, it can be done. It's not all about resources. You can actually work with...
Just, I think the public needs to know that. We're not just throwing money at everything, but we're throwing ideas as well.
Yeah, we're throwing ideas, we're throwing volunteers, and one of the things that we've been talking to the CBI and the TUC about is, under their corporate social responsibility models, time off for people to become administrators, coaches, all that sort of thing. And I, you know, again, that doesn't cost money, and you know, companies can benefit from that. So it isn't about structured sport is important, and we want to develop that. But but it's also making sure that unstructured sport is out there, giving people tasters and opportunities as well. On the Guardian story this morning, as ever, I think it's blown out of all proportions in the sense that what we all are doing, regardless of whoever's in government, you know, after the next election, we'll have to look at how we use that money smarter, and we'll have to look at the bodies that we've got. But I think in our sporting area, the infrastructure has already changed. And yes, it might be that we might have to use back office facilities and share those, but not damage the core, because I want the core now to be embedded in to deliver what we want to achieve.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. I've got a question back of there, and I've got another question over here in a moment. Okay. Hi, Gerry. Lee Stevens from Grimsby Institute. Just like to focus, if I could, on what in further education for a second. Sport England and the AOC are just kicking off a consultation document on the future of sport in FE. I notice on the delegate list, John Hole from the BCS is here somewhere, so he'll probably confirm what I'm about to say. But from geographically isolated Grimsby, over the years we've been quite, I think, quite a proactive institution in terms of FE sport. And in the North East Lincolnshire area, which has got a fair degree of deprivation, Oasis Academy is popping up all over the show, the schools with far, far better facilities than we've got now. Along came the LSC's building programme for FE a number of years ago, which was the springboard for us to actually produce a Filton-esque facility in little old Grimsby, and the money ran out. The irony for us is that we've got the EFGI money to build a university centre, which is on the site of our existing sports facilities that are going to get flattened. But there's zero money available now from the LSC pot to actually replace that. So from having a carrot dangled with a real springboard, we're knackered, for want of a better phrase. So I'm just interested in your view on where FE sits, because you see the universities with fabulous facilities, the academy is now getting fabulous facilities. FE are stuck between the stills again for me.
It's a fair point, and we're very disappointed, obviously, what happened with the LSC and the late stage. I was finding out that the money had run out, and you're aware of the, you know, difficulties and the problems and the ultimate resignation of the individual that was involved. But it is a problem for us, because university sport has been revamped, and you're right, the investment's going in. Busa, who run university sport, revamped their competitions and the work's going on there. We're going to have to work with yourselves about trying to find any capital that's around to help you with the projects. But that's why I think the county sports partnerships involvement is important. I think the facility strategies that we're asking Sport England to look at across the country, and we're asking local authorities to do that as well. What's your sports facility strategy? Where do you want to head? And whether we can find some funding through that and through some of the themed rounds that Sport England will develop. Talked about women, talked about disability. I think there's one plan for rural areas. So there may be opportunities, in the coming year for us to be able to do something around that. But I recognise the problem. It's affected me in Bradford in terms of my own college and the difficulties that we're facing.
Gentlemen here, we've got one after this. No?
Yeah, hi. Mike Tilsley, Partnership Development Manager for the Scarborough and Fylde School Sports Partnership. I would agree with what we talked earlier about individuals and people being the most important things. We've talked a lot about money, and no matter what we do today with the work within the local authorities or anything, we can't do it without individuals. I think one of the problems we're facing is the work at the base level, the primary school level. Lots of very, very enthusiastic people trying to break away from the traditional sports that you've indicated, but ultimately we do end up with traditional sports because those are the easiest things to do. And my constant gripe is the lack of preparation that is available for people coming into even the primary school sector, and this problem with at ITT, at initial teacher training, with the fact that they're only getting 6 hours sometimes a year, and these people are then going into primary schools. They're being given a role as a primary link teacher because maybe they're the youngest or the last ones in. And then everything that we do in this room, everybody that everybody does in this room, the foundation and the base of that pyramid is down at primary schools. My question is really, when are the government or the universities actually going to look at this base of the pyramid and start preparing teachers who are going to primary schools better for the delivery and the support of of sport within not only the schools and then the development into primary schools. And we do have a street cricket in Scarborough because we do have, despite the fact that it's Scarborough, it's the highest indication of deprivation in North Yorkshire. And that street cricket has impacted very, very well upon primary teachers because it's given them a view of something that is simpler than a very technically gifted game, really. So my simple question is, where are we going at the base level? ITT, 6 hours is not enough.
It's a continuing battle because of the need for teachers to have a wide range of awareness of the curriculum and the responsibilities that they've got. And I think where we tackle that is through the school sports partnerships, through the continuing way that we try and get sports leaders in there. And some primary schools, effectively, because you know school budgets, whilst they're always tight, there is opportunity to buy in provision. And it's more difficult in deprived areas, I understand that. But perhaps we need to find a more clever way of looking at local partnerships with, GPs and primary care trusts being able to support the sporting activity that may go on in a primary school. So I think we've got to be creative and innovative about these things. And certainly, as we keep sport high in the profile and getting parents involved and communities more involved, it becomes people asking the question, well, why is it not happening? What is the barrier that's stopping that? So I think we can pursue it that way. We will always have the discussions with education about training of teachers. I don't want to be too explosive, but I would argue, why does it have to be the teacher that leads the situation in terms of this sporting activity?
Really good job. I thought my voice was loud enough. But often we do need that enthusiasm to be able to do it. And I think schools sometimes take the easy route and they do take the cheaper option, and they are employing people who, to be honest, if we're talking about high quality PE and not delivering high quality PE. So we really do have to have a wide partnership. But I think I will go back again and do think that we do need to expand that.
Do you have one more last question from the floor? I know we've got one from Craig on the panel here. No, okay, so Craig, you can have the last question, I think.
Okay, is this on? Yeah. Morning, Minister, again. Just a quickie from me, if I may, in terms of children and young people. I think you set us all a challenge with the free swimming for 16 and under. And I think it's been... I think we've actually proven the worth now in terms of those initiatives, and obviously that we've got a challenge in the sector and the industry, how we look at the sustainability of that. And certainly some, in terms of the areas we work in, the numbers coming through of young people swimming for the first time, they're actually proving the worth of that investment. And I really welcome that investment. I think it's probably one of the best investments the government have made in terms of our young people, given all the challenges that came around with that. And certainly in the likes of the Wigan Trust, who actually have given free swimming to the whole of their community, is a great example. And I think it's where we're trying to lead ourselves in the future in terms of trying to make that sustainable. I suppose the question really is, in terms of any potential new government or if you get back into power, what would be the thoughts about trying to make sure we have that sustainability in terms of free swimming for young people?
And it certainly has been a massive success. And what's impressed me has been the number of authorities that didn't take part who now want to take part. Yeah. And so what we said was that the funding would be through the CSR period. Once that ends and you get to the next CSR, you're obviously, it will be a high priority for us there. Because what I'm finding when I go around the country is exactly what you're saying, is that you're getting more people actually doing the swimming. But the spin-off effects then in terms of other recreational and leisure benefits is there. Yeah. And it's been a no-brainer as far as we're concerned. So hopefully we will get re-elected, and when we do, that will be a top priority.
Thanks for that.
Thank you. Just take the opportunity to thank Gerry Sutcliffe, MP, Minister of Sport, for coming and speaking to us today. Thank you.